What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. Today, I have a power couple that live in Ellicott City, Maryland, just did their first deal in Maryland, and it was a wild one. There is a lot of really cool stuff. We start with a ton of like mindset and blocks and things that you're probably struggling with that you need to hear, and then we follow it up with how they made, I'm not going to give away the number, but they made really good money on a project that they found with a handwritten letter. So I'm really excited about today. I hope you guys enjoy it.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity, and that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
What's up, everybody? I got another Deal Breakdown podcast. I'm really excited about this one. And I've been talking to this couple for the past few weeks about some financials and things like that. And they've had some recent success in their real estate business, which I'm really excited to talk about because I know they put in a lot of hard work. So I know if you're listening to this right now, you're probably putting in a lot of hard work and effort, and you might not be seeing results. But I hope that as we talk through this today, you're going to realize that you're just right there. Like you just got to keep going and keep going and keep going and just find that strength to take that one next step. And you never know what's going to be created from that step. I remember when I was getting started, it took the wholesaling my first deal. It took me 4.5 months to get that first one under contract. And most people give up at month like 2 or 3 or 4. And had I done that, I wouldn't even be talking to you right now. I don't know what I'd be doing. I'd probably be flying some helicopter for Boeing or something like that, or Airbus, or Boeing doesn't have a lot of helicopters, but I'd be a test pilot doing something. I would have given up on my real estate career and just stayed in the military, retired, and done something else. But that last month and a half, that belief change was massive for me. And I bet we're going to hear some of that today. So on the podcast today, I've got Kelly and Shigato Bhattacharjee. Did I screw it up or did I get it?
Perfect. Bingo.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. I did a little practicing beforehand, just in case you're wondering, but if you see the spelling on the name and you watch the video, you are not going to know how to pronounce it, I don't think. So I'm slightly impressed with myself. I can't screw the rest of the podcast up now. So Kelly and Shigato, how are you guys? I'm so happy to have you guys on the show.
Great. Thanks for having us.
It's
absolutely
an honor. Thank you.
Well, hey, tell me a little bit about each of you and maybe some background, how you found yourself here in the seven-figure flipping world and in real estate.
Yeah, my background is in finance. I have an undergrad in finance and then I have my MBA as well. And so I really love investments and money management and that sort of thing. And truthfully, I have been wanting to get into real estate for probably over 10 years, fair to say. And every time I was bringing it up to Shigato, it just didn't feel like the right time. Would you say that's true? And he just wasn't really interested in it. And then finally, after this past summer, I brought it up again and he said, you know, maybe we can look into it. And I thought, that sounds like a yes, like we're doing it then. So so I was all in then, so when you showed some interest at this point. And so that's when we joined 7F. And but that was as a result, actually, because I met virtually Keith Meals. You might know him through ClickFunnels. Yeah. So we're Facebook friends and he's the one that told us to read your book. And so I bought the book, read the book, and then you read the book as well. And decided then to go ahead and join with you after that.
Cool. Well, hey, Shigato, before we get to you, I want to ask Kelly something. So please. 10 years you were thinking about doing real estate. Like, how did that bug start? How did that start like 10 years ago?
Honestly, like I just always, even before I got married, like was always watching, you know, MLS listings before I even had money to buy anything and just always wanted to have property. And we had talked about like, oh, maybe getting like a condo in Florida or something like that and then renting it out. And like I said, I was constantly coming up with different options for us and he just wasn't feeling it, to be honest. And it's just, I love real estate for the fact that one, it's a great way to diversify your finances. Secondly, you can do really well with it if you know what you're doing. And like I said, I just always have had an interest in other ways to, you know, invest our money. So I just have always honestly had an interest in it.
Well, with a degree in finance and an MBA, Was real estate something that came into your schooling and was taught to you throughout that time or any of that? Or was it all very much like securities?
It was all pretty much securities, mutual funds, you know, stocks, bonds, that sort of thing. But not a lot with real estate. And I don't really even have any family members or anybody that does it. But it's just something that I just knew that if you did it well, that you could do very well with it. And also, you and I have spoke before, I want another way to diversify our investments because I felt pretty uneasy with being so heavily weighted in the market. And so as we started investing even more in the last few years, especially, I expressed concern that, you know, we are so overweighted and that made me nervous.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think real estate doesn't come into the financial conversation in like classically trained finance experts, financial advisors, a lot of them, things like that?
That's a really good question. I don't know if it's because they're not knowledgeable about it. I don't know if people think of it that way because they just think of owning a home as a place to live and don't look at it maybe as an investment vehicle. Maybe that's why. But just from what I've learned in the last week from you, I feel like what a miss, you know, to not have that knowledge. And I watched actually a recent YouTube video of yours, I think it was where you were spelling out ideal.
Oh yeah.
And it made so much sense to me. And I thought, gosh, I even told you on Sunday, I said, you got to watch this video. Like it was short. It was to the point. It was incredibly informative. And I thought, man, they should have this in schools, like as an option, truthfully, like it's something that everybody should know about, not just, you know, mutual funds and ETFs and all that kind of stuff.
Can I give you my take? Is it okay?
Yeah.
Cool. This is my show. I'm probably going to do it anyway, but I just don't think they're financially motivated to do it. Like I think Wall Street controls the conversation when it comes to money. They have billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars that come into it and everybody gets paid for it. And there's just not a lot of financial motivation to teach the real estate aspect of it as a portion of wealth building. And I think like, even when I think about IRAs and 401ks, like think about using your IRA right now. They say that a self-directed IRA, you can invest in non-traditional assets. A non-traditional asset being a house and a traditional asset being a stock.
Right.
Just those two ways of saying something to me says non-traditional equals risky. Yep. Be careful. This is not the traditional way, but the IRA and 401k was really created to drive the market, to drive those securities versus like houses have been around way longer, land way longer, right? And so it's just an interesting kind of take for me. So I was just curious. I don't talk to a lot of like, you know, brokers and financial advisors and folks like that about how they were trained around money. But yeah. I definitely think that this is an area that could be a lot better positioned, at least, especially like you said, for diversification. So,
well, and they don't earn commission too. You know, exactly. If you're trading your account, obviously they don't earn commission from that.
The only way is inside of like a REIT type ETF or, you know, your trading REITs and putting them in your portfolio. And that's what people think like investing in real estate is buying a real estate investment trust that owns a bunch of single family houses, multifamily houses, things like that. And is doing what we do just with horrible, very low returns. So, and that's how they make money. So, okay, Shigato, what about you? What for 10 years or I don't know, however long you guys have been married, Kelly's been like, let's do real estate. And you're like, no. What's going on?
Pretty much. That's exactly how it is.
Well, not quite really. I'll just take on the question that you just was asking before. I think one of the reasons real estate does not compare well or is not as well known as like, you know, equity market and stuff like that is because I think there is this, other than this simple distinction between non-traditional versus traditional, I think real estate is in some cases also seen somewhat a lot of like a tribal knowledge, meaning families that are good in real estate, you know, the Rockefeller, let's just go there. Bill Allen, I'll come to that. But it's kind of like, you know, it's like, yeah, so if you know Bill and all right, and you know, his friends and family, they're all real estate people. The stock market, whether it's Wall Street funding or whatnot, somehow have managed to really distribute that knowledge. And not only that, have created like a tiered structure. So from the top level, you know, you got the people that are making billions. And then let's say you can make 100 million. Then you have the people that are making millions. They have a story for every single one of them. They have the knowledge base that they share. I don't see that in real estate. Now, when I got to 7F, then yes, you know, first time I actually saw this kind of a breakdown and making very obvious to everybody. But I thought that was one of the things that real estate somehow, it's like sports, right? If you're really good in sports, you're going to be like a professional athlete in the NFL or the NBA, but most people won't. So anyway, so yes.
Well, hey, before you keep going, there's something that came up in my head. The ease of getting in to the stock market is very easy. So like if you have $50, you can play. Yeah. It's like a casino, right? And so they've kind of like decentralized the level of getting in. So when you started talking about that, it started making me think about like the knowledge. Like you don't have to have a lot of knowledge to buy some Apple stock, but you have to have a lot of what appears to be a lot of knowledge to buy a house or to get involved in real estate at all, which you're right. It's like, how do we reduce the hurdle that it feels like it takes to jump? To get into the game and play. And so that's a great takeaway that I have is what I try to do with this podcast, YouTube channel, things like that is try to remove this curtain that seems to be this like mystique, this mystery from what's happening on the other side of the curtain. I remember writing that book, my book, Seven Figure Flipping Underground. Yeah. I was like, it took me 2 years to figure out how to simplify everything to like show that there's an underground world of investing that is not only has integrity, but has an opportunity to make a lot of money. And it really to take away the mystery of buying houses off the market, not with a realtor. Because the National Association of Realtors has done that against us. They have said, use a realtor. This is what you need to do because that's where the money is, right? It's like, the same thing with Wall Street. It's almost like the Wall Street of real estate and I'm a realtor telling you that. So it's just, it's made it what appears to be very complicated with the loan system, the real estate agent, the contracts, the inspection, all of the stuff. It's just like, it's a huge hurdle and people are like, too confusing, not interested. Right. Let me just invest in the stock market. And you're right. They've pumped, I don't know, trillions of dollars in marketing from the stock market, done a great job with it.
Yep. So I, of course, I have an engineering degree. I was actually in pure science before that. I don't do any engineering anymore. I haven't done much in the last 15 years. I do business management in aerospace. The reason I see some synergy between what I do versus what we're doing now with Kelly, it's basically we're both of us are numbers people. We're all numbers all the time. If numbers don't work, we don't work. And then the other thing that I think I have typically taken, let's say a third level down interest in people in terms of understanding what they're really about. And I see a lot of application of that through your book or even through the runway training, et cetera, in this business, in the real estate business. With Kelly, of course, I mean, we've known each other for 20 years now almost, and we've been married for 15 of it. One of the things with real estate closet, yes, she has been talking about this for about 10 years plus. We also built two houses, and the first house that we built, our builder actually went to jail. Oh, yeah. So I kid you not.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. For the first 3 months, everything was getting built, and we're like, yay, this house in the middle of Cincinnati, a wonderful story. And then nobody shows up for like 5 weeks, and we're like, what happened here? Mm-hmm. We had no clue. So it's kind of like peeling the onion back, but bottom line is we learned a lot. We actually had to hire an attorney to get all the liens of the property, things like that, et cetera, et cetera. So it gave us some real exposure into the world of like construction and sub-tier contractors and things like that. So we built another house over here. And last summer when we were at a point, we went to vacation and we came back and we talked about buying like properties, whether it's in Maui or in Florida, and sort of renting it out. And we really had like a business plan on that. And then that kind of led to this discussion to say, if we're going to do that, maybe we should talk to this Keith, that Kelly has talked about.
Well, I didn't really know him. I knew of him. He Facebook friended me, I think, like a while back. And I'm like, I just like to watch his posts because he was showing like before and after pictures. And I was like, oh, finally, he's one person I know, that does something with real estate. So when you said that you had, well, maybe we can do it. I'm like, I'm going to talk to the only person that I know in real estate. Yeah. So I messaged him and then we had a call with him and he told us about your book.
And by the time we read your book and both of us read it, you kind of validated some of the things that we were already questioning in terms of the amount of time that I'm spending, is the return on that time you know, what it should be, you know, and by the time you said, you know, do you want more free time in your book? You talked about building wealth, that you actually can do more than what you think you are doing today. All those things were checking out for us. You know, it was like a confluence of a convergence of decision making. So by the time, you know, late August came last year, we're like, talk to 7F, see what happens.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you brought up something very interesting. When somebody gets the bug to learn more about real estate investing, usually what they do is they talk to the person that they know who's doing it. And so, and not just real estate investing, but real estate in general. And so it's really important. I think your story could have gone the opposite direction had you talked to a realtor, or had you talked to somebody who was like sour on investing, right? That could have easily talked you out of it, because you're at that point, you're at the most fragile state of like this idea way before execution. Right. And it's that your circle at that time really influences what you decide to do. Mm-hmm. And so when you mentioned that, I was like, what if you talk to a realtor who's like, oh, I can help you find a rental house. Yeah. And then, or I can help you buy that house in Maui to rent out. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, great. Like, let's do that. And your direction and path comes back to that person. So the reason I say that is because if you're listening to this and you're thinking about getting started, like the seed has been planted, it's just a tiny seed and it needs to get watered. Really be careful about what you let in and who you let in to water your seed, because that is so important to the future harvest of who you get connected with, who you're talking to, what you're letting, like what's happening. Because, and I'm not saying it has to be me, but if it's a realtor, like if it's somebody who's not doing what you want to do, like don't take advice, because you might be like, oh, I have a cousin that was in real estate in 2009 or 8 or 7, and they got destroyed. And so you talk to them like, I'm not touching real estate for the rest of my life. And the next thing you know, that little seed just doesn't germinate, doesn't create anything, and just gets crushed. And so I would just like that. Usually you only have like one or two people at that time who know anything about real estate and usually go to the most comfortable place. So what's really interesting, Kelly, is you went to an uncomfortable place of somebody who you didn't really know. That's why social media has been very helpful for a lot of this stuff, but potentially harmful also. And so I always recommend people try to find somebody who has what appears to be a similar, similar kind of culture and character and those kind of things that you have, ideally has an outcome that you're looking for. And you can really see through the garbage, like the social media filter of what like social media it does. It like shows the highlight reel a lot of times, and find somebody and really ask them like, how hard is this? How difficult is it? Like, what are some of the setbacks that you've had? What should I be worried about? Those kind of things. And really just kind of understand it, as opposed to, because everything's not sunny in the real estate world all the time, which I'm sure we'll get to. So really try to find somebody who has the life that you want. And if you want to be an investor, don't talk to a realtor that doesn't invest. Even if a realtor works with investors, talk to an investor. If you want to be a realtor and you want to be a high high performing realtor, somebody that does a lot of deals, find and talk to a realtor as close as you can get to somebody who's doing a lot of deals, and really ask them what that's like. And so that's the best advice I can give, because I thought it was cool. The only person you knew was somebody on social media who you didn't really have a background with, but you were found friends on there and found a similar interest. And then, you know, fortunate enough for me, he recommended the book. And not only that, you guys bought it and read it, because there's a lot of people that buy it and don't read it. There's a lot of people that don't buy it. There's a lot of people that don't take that next step. And I say all the time, like the hardest thing, it's hard for me to sell the book. It's even harder for me to get somebody to read it.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about this deal. You guys ready?
Ready.
Okay, Kelly. So I'm sure like the day after joining Seven Figure Runway, you got your first deal. Is that right?
Not close. No, not at all, actually. Is quite the opposite. So we joined actually the first day of school. So it was like August the 28th. I didn't join actually until I knew how my son's first day of middle school went, because I wanted to see, make sure everything was good there before I committed to something like this. But anyway, so I spent the first like month and a half or so just doing the trainings, and you were also doing them when you had time, and then started cold calling and realized it was going to be you know, it was going to be pretty intense and going to be a lot of work. And thank God for people like Lindsay Arco, who were incredible with coaching, and Adam, of course, but who, like I said, just were incredibly insightful, especially when I was getting frustrated because I was making all these calls and oftentimes I wasn't even getting anybody. And when I was, you know, and I was trying to talk to pre-foreclosure people. And so I was also learning about the pre-foreclosure process and that sort of thing. And just trying to refine my script and stuff too. It was a lot of work. We didn't get our first deal signed until what, like 5 months later, 6 months later. So definitely it was not right away at all. And we had to pivot at one point as well.
And we had learnings on the way. Sorry, Bill.
No, go ahead.
No, I said, and we had learnings on the way. So for example, after the first couple of deals, we quickly realized that one of the reasons we were losing in some of these offers was partly because none of us were real estate agents. You know, the commission was, you know, screwing up the number.
And having a GC made it more expensive.
Some of the burdens that we're putting on the deal that we, you know, in a very competitive area, that was clearly something. We were close, just not close enough.
Well, we did have a couple of
So did you know that you were learning at the time? Like, did you feel like you were learning
sure.
and growing, like seeing progress? Or did you feel like you were kind of stuck or frustrated?
For the most part, I would say the first couple of months, like I felt like I was making some progress. I would go to accountability and they're like, you're doing great. And that was very helpful because, you know, I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur, a lot of times you feel like you're doing it all by yourself and nobody maybe really cares how things are going. And I know you were really busy. And so there's only so much that my 12-year-old really wants to hear about real estate. So, you know, accountability was really helpful in that respect. And also, like I say, just to keep me motivated. But it also became to a point where, like I say, I was probably calling for 3.5 to 4 months and with no really, I mean, we'd made some offers, we'd had some visits, but no verbal confirmation or anything at that point. And I remember I was getting really frustrated. It was right after Christmas. And, I think Adam posted in Facebook, like, I've got a little time tomorrow at 6:15. Anybody want it? And I was like, I gotta freaking talk to him because I don't know what in the heck am I doing wrong? I feel like everybody's saying you're doing all the right stuff, Kelly. It's going to work. You just got to stick with it, which I was, and I wasn't going to not stick with it. But I also was like, what? I'm doing something wrong. There's a miss here, whether it's my script, whether it's who I'm trying to talk to or something, but I should be getting more traction, I felt like. So then I talked to Adam and he's like, Kelly, you need more leads. You need to widen your funnel. That was incredibly impactful because he was exactly right. Because I then started to incorporate probate leads in there too. So that gave me another source and more than doubled the prospects that I could reach out to. And so that was a game changer. But like I said, I didn't get to that point until I was calling for a few months and I was like, what is going on? Then after opening the funnel, then we had a couple verbals come. Actually, we had one verbal that, you know, that we thought for sure we're going to get and didn't happen. And then, which was a heartbreaker. And then like next week later, Anyway, so there was a gentleman that had committed that he was in pre-foreclosure and he was like, Kelly, you know, we've talked for a couple months. I don't want to sell my house, but if I have to, it's going to go to you. You've been so nice. And I've loved talking to you, like all the things. Right. And I was like, and I told you, I'm like, he's going to, because you know, like he's made verbal confirmation that he's going to sell us his house. He knows he can't afford it. And, he had also texted me that he's, you know, Kelly, happy holidays. You know, if I have to sell this, it's going to go to you. Like we were really in communication. So I'm like, oh, this one's going to be the one, like it's going to happen for us. Right. And then, I saw that his house, I was just going back through following up with some leads and I saw his house was up for auction. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I felt bad because we had talked so much. He's in his 70s. Like I just felt really bad. So I was like, oh, I got to call him. I got to tell him. He probably doesn't know. And so I call him and he was like, oh yeah, Kelly, you know, I was going to call you. I had to hire an agent because I just don't really know what I'm doing. I was like, what the heck? What happened the last couple months, you know? And this came on the back of losing the Lothian house the week before on my birthday, nonetheless. And because it's such a horrible birthday, but it was. And so then when he freaking lied, basically the next week, I had a little bit of a breakdown, right?
Yes.
And you're like, take a step back, Kelly, take a step back. Like you need, and I'm like, no. I mean, I'll take a break for like 15 or 20, but I'm coming back. But like that one hurt because he was like, Kelly, I just had to hire an agent because I just didn't know what I was doing. But it was so nice talking to you over this time. I'm like, thanks. But that, of course, led to the conversation with Adam telling us both, I think, sellers are going to lie to you, Kelly. And I was like, ah, and I told you, I said, but words of affirmation are like one of my primary love languages. So like, when you tell me that, I'm like, I believed you. But anyways, I didn't tell him. I'm like, okay, well, good luck to you. But having those two losses like back to back, that's when I kind of lost it a little bit. And I actually, I think, had a call scheduled with Lindsay that week, like that Sunday. And she was like, just again, encouraging, like, you're doing all the right stuff. It's going to happen. But anyway, so it certainly was not easy at all. Yeah. But just stuck with it. But after that one, the Upper Marlboro one, the guy lying, that's when I decided, okay, I need to do something a little different here. I'm not going to quit cold calling because it can be effective. It does open up the conversation. But I was just like, I need to talk to each of these people personally. And I told you, I mean, we did do some driving for dollars and I'm not opposed to that, but that's not scalable and that's not efficient, especially for my life right now. So I told you, I said, I just need to get to them. Like, I'm not even making contact with these people a lot of times. Like, I'm leaving messages at best and I don't even know if they're on the right phone numbers. And I said, well, I literally was just thinking, like, how can I talk to them personally without actually going to them? And that's when I started doing the handwritten notes. So that kind of came as a result of kind of those losses and then having a bit of a major breakdown there. So.
Okay. Well, this is real talk, everyone. So, that was a, like timeline, right? Multiple kind of, we're so close, we've got it. And then it's like almost like this contract that you think is coming gets ripped out of your hands, shredded, torn up, and burnt on fire at the same time. So I know exactly how that feels. And this isn't to somebody who's done this for years. So like if a seller does that to me now, it's almost like I just expect it. So even once I sign the contract, I still expect them to do something like that. Like hire an agent or sell it to somebody else at the same time I have a contract with them, which is why we record it and do all kinds of stuff like that. So this has happened to me so many times that nothing surprises me anymore. But at that point, like it's interesting because we can do this podcast now because we're talking about a deal. You've had some success, right? But a month ago, I wonder if you're as confident as you are right now.
Not a chance.
Right?
No.
Not a chance? So, go ahead.
But I think not as confident, but we never really thought of quitting. Because to answer your earlier question, we were learning continuously. We both were. And I kid you not, I mean, I think the 7F between Adam and Lindsay and all this, the Sunday morning coffee calls, I mean, they were giving us actual nuggets to implement, learning from the experience that we just had. And next time we didn't make the same mistake or we did what was supposed to do. And that helped us in through these 6 months. I think that was big for us. So we were like,
where does that come from? Where does the not quitting gene come from in you guys?
Well, I even told you, even the day that I had the breakdown and you're like, Kelly, take a step back, like get away from this for a minute. And I was like, what did I say to you? I'm never going to quit this because I know I'm going to be successful at this. Yeah. I've said that to you multiple times and not in like arrogant, like I'm an amazing person or something. Cause that's not necessarily true, but like, just because I have a blog, I've grown a business, I've had some success. I've also had failures. And so what I fail, keep it moving. Like that's not that I'm going to fail at some of this and that's okay. Right. Where'd it come from? Just dealing with tough stuff and having some level of success, I think also helps.
Yeah. I think, you know, we both of us didn't serve like you did, but I think we have had some trainings in our personal life in dealing with adversity.
For sure.
And it's kind of like, okay, so just shut up and get on with it.
Yeah.
So we and both of us, when we met and we kind of quickly saw some of that.
Very tough.
And 20 years down, we're still doing that, I guess. But, you know, and that's something, you know, I can say that we will complain for about an hour and then we will be like, all right, let's see, what are we going to do? And that helps.
Yeah. You
know? Doesn't mean we're special.
So it's probably like the lack of victim mentality and just the level also that I think I see and hear a level of commitment that I don't often see in other people is like that you committed to do something and you're all in on it.
Oh, for sure.
Is that true, Kelly? Like I remember you so vividly in like we were doing like a challenge or we were doing something before FHL that year. And you were like camera on, front row. It was all virtual, but you were there every day. You were on time. You were playing all out. You're in the chat. You're asking questions. Like you're like the front row student and somebody who shows up. Like I know there's two people in the last challenge that we just did like 2 weeks ago that have joined Runway that I know, like I'm like the teacher that can see the students that are most committed. Yeah. And they, if, and they're dedicated, they join the program, but I know that like I have people that join the program and then I have the people who are like all in on mm-hmm. the program. It's like two different things. And to be perfectly honest, we get people that quit the program. Like this is not, it's not like everybody just stays for years and years and years. They quit on themselves. They're not all in on it. They didn't make the same commitment as you did and other people have in the past. And so I'm curious, like, how important do you think that was? And like, where did that come from? Was it a commitment to yourself? Is it a commitment to us? Like, what does that look like for
Probably
you?
Both, to be honest. Like I said, when Shigata would mention that, when you said, yeah, maybe we can get into it, I took that as a green light. We're going full on. I'm joining whatever mastermind I have to join. I don't care what the cost is. Like, we are doing this. And so, yeah, I was all in on this, knowing that you really weren't at this time just yet because you had work commitments and stuff and weren't going to be able to commit to it. And, but I didn't care. I'm like, you said you were fine if I spend the money and if I pursue this. And so I was like, then I'm doing this. Like this is my shot. Like I'm finally doing this. So yeah, I went to the challenge. I didn't necessarily know I was going to join right away, but I knew I was going to join at some point, even before I even did the challenge. Just based on, I kind of stalked you for a while, like on social and watched a lot of your stuff, hopefully not in a creepy way, but I just wanted to absorb as much as I could about the community and things. And so I was in the free Facebook group and just trying to get comfortable with some of the context things that were shared in there. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely was all in. And once I joined, I wanted to do it not just for myself, not just for us, our family, but then of course I wanted to show up for the group too. So it was kind of a combination of both. So, but I knew this was my chance because I didn't want you to go back. So I'm like, no, already said we're doing it. So yeah. I'm joining as soon as I can.
We're not going to go back. I mean, even if I couldn't really join as much as Kelly had, you know, back then, and she, you know, full on, let's put it that way. I was going through the runway trainings and I can see, like, even from Tyler Jensen's, you know, training modules, you know, things, what he's doing, he's sitting with a GC, that video that he did on like how to do the budgeting, you know, how to do a project plan. I can identify myself personally with Tyler's video. I can say, you know, I can see what he's saying. So you develop that kind of like a connection and say, you know, these guys really make sense.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we're in.
Yeah.
Awesome. I asked some of those questions because I think, honestly, under the surface, these are the most important things for people that are listening to figure out in order to transition to the next thing we're going to talk about, which is getting their deal and what does it look like and all that stuff. But all of this is the work that's done under the surface to really make a true commitment, actually believe in themselves. So there's a lot of things I see. It's like, Kelly, you have a strong belief in your ability to do something that you've committed yourself to. Shigato, having the belief in Kelly and give her the space to do the thing that she wants to do and come along for the ride as much as you could in the beginning and then getting more and more involved now over time. And then also just like playing all out, like when you're in and not, there's no quit. Like there's no quit in it. It's like, you know, we had a guy named Walter Bond. He's a public speaker. He's in the NBA. He was in the NBA and now he's in the Public Speaking Hall of Fame, a huge mentor of mine, amazing guy. He spoke at Flip Hacking Live like 3 or 4 years in a row from, I think, like 2017 through like 2021, probably. And he does this bit where he talks about a pity party. He's like, you can have a pity party, but it can't last more than 3 days. And so he talks about it. He's like, you can get knocked down. And he does this whole bit with like Lionel Richie music and all this stuff. And then he's like, but like, that's it. Like you can cry about it for a little bit, but then you got to get back up and get back on the horse. And it's just, you can't sit in that for too long. And that's the kind of way I see it. It's like, okay, I'm going to feel sorry for myself for about 5 minutes and then I'm just back at it. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't have time to complain or look back. I'm going forward. Yeah. And I think that's where really successful people lie. And a lot of it, like you said, you might have had some things in your history, some struggles, some things that you've overcome that have allowed you to go faster. Like over time, it's not about stopping because we're always going to stop at some point. It's about like speeding up the start again. like not stopping for as long. Yeah. And we're just shortening and shortening it. So it's like stop stopping, but if you do stop, just make it a really short period of time.
I also think that my skills align with this. In fact, when I called my mom after we did our wholesale deal, and I was talked to her on the phone about it, and she didn't know what any, you know, wholesaling is or anything like that. So I'm trying to explain what exactly I did. And she was like, "Well, Kelly, that sounds like you. Like negotiating and trying to," she's like, "that sounds like something you would really love." She's like, "I would hate doing it, but I can see why you would love it." So. Mm.
You know, when you mentioned that, I'm still not 100% sure that my parents know what I do. I don't know. They've been to my events and they come to the, my dad's been there. He's been on stage with me. He retired me at our last multifamily event last year. And I'm not 100% sure that they know like what a wholesale deal is or what I do. So, okay. You guys are in Ellicott City, Maryland. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up as a kid. So it's really cool. You mentioned that it was a bit of a challenging market. It is an expensive market, a bit challenging. Let's talk about this deal. Let's like hammer through a couple. We spent a lot of time on the front end of this, of like the mindset. I think it's really important though. I think this was needed. I usually spend a shorter time in the beginning and get to the deal, but I think this is really, really good stuff. I think a lot of the things that we talked about will be very helpful to the listeners. Let's talk about this deal. So you were cold calling and then you pulled some probates, started calling some more, and then you mentioned handwritten letters. So you were physically handwriting them. Is that how you got this lead?
Yep, exactly. And the only reason we would have got this deal is because of a handwritten letter, because he was on my cold call list and I did try to reach out to him, but because of his phone not having any storage for messages and not him not answering his phone, so I was never able to reach him. And so there was a handful of those people. And the way I determined who I was going to write letters to, because obviously I only have a finite amount of time to do that, is I would look up their, I was targeting pre-foreclosures right now with these, and I would look up their cases on the Maryland Judiciary website and see kind of how far along they were really, like had they done mediation, were they pretty far down the path? And if so, then I was going to reach out to those. Just from my experience the last like 4 months prior, I found that early conversations with pre-foreclosure people, I was spending a lot of time just either sharing with them the options or trying to help them find out how they can save their house, because none of them were saying they were ready to do a cash offer. So I wanted to make sure they kind of come to terms with the reality that they may actually have to take action to sell their house. So I did write him a note, and you know, I didn't even know what for sure to write, but I just wrote it as though I was like talking to my friend. I hope your pre-foreclosure case is going well. I would love to share with you some options that you have available to you if you need that help. And, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, you can reach out to me. I'd be happy to see how I can help you. It was kind of just really simple and like, hey, I'm here. Nothing really necessarily about a cash offer because I didn't want to turn them off right away. I just wanted to let them know I'm here to help. And so remember, he got that note. And then the following week, he did call me. And of course, when he called, he said, "What are my options? And I want to stay in my house." And so we spent that first week literally just talking about how he can stay in his house. And he didn't even know how much he owed. And he's an older gentleman. He was 72 and had some, I don't want to say dementia, but there were some things going on there mentally where he was struggling with understanding exactly the scope of what was happening. And I said, couldn't reach out or didn't try reaching out with his credit union because he was so mad at them. I was like, well, we need to talk to them. And so I did a 3-way call with him and the credit union and found out how much he owed. He had $11,000 in arrears and he's like, there's no way I can pay that. And then we found out what his loan payoff amount was. And so then I said, well, we can actually make you a cash offer. And then when I started talking about cash offer, like I said, prior to that, we were talking every day. And then when I started to talk about a cash offer, he didn't really want to talk to me so much anymore. And so then he fell off the planet for a few days. And then, you know, but I still kept trying to call him and text him. And we get disconnected too, because he had some bad Wi-Fi reception. And so I didn't know if it was the bad reception or he was just annoyed with me. I think it was probably both,
no,
to be honest.
In his house, you can't get any cell.
That is true. Yeah.
Period.
It was tough. Yeah. But so anyway, so he fell off the planet for a while when I started to try to tell him like, this is a real deal. Like you have an auction scheduled. And I kept telling him like, we have a finite amount of time to do something here to help you. And, he didn't want to hear about an offer. He didn't want to go there. He just mentally was not prepared to talk about that. And so I was texting him some of this information. So at least he was informed on what is going to happen to him, because he really didn't have family or friends that were helping him at all. And so, of course though, I was getting increasingly stressed out and frustrated because he was running out of time for us to even make an offer at this point and to close anything. And so I ended up we actually had an accountability call, and Ralph, who's amazing, was in our accountability group. And I was telling him about this. I said, I am driving this guy crazy. I am calling him incessantly and leaving him text messages. And I even told you this. I said, I'm annoying him. And I think I'm annoying me. Like I would hate me right now because I'm so persistent about this. But I'm like, I feel bad. This guy needs to understand, whether it's us helping him or not, like he needs to understand this is going to happen, you know, in a week and a half. And sometimes I was like, well, maybe he's not getting my messages. Maybe we should drive to his house. And then he would leave me a message like at 2:30 in the morning or at 12:30 in the morning. So I'm like, I think he just doesn't want to talk to me. And I get it. So, so he was getting them. And so, finally after our accountability, and I talked to Ralph and I said, I'm not going to reach out to this guy anymore. I've seriously annoyed him. And I don't know what more I can do. I've reached out to him so many times and he's never responded. He's like, Kelly, you know, I would just reach out again, you know? And I'm like, Ralph, like, you don't even understand how many times I've talked to this guy. He's like, no, I would try it again. Thank God he said that. Cause then that same day I'm like, all right, I will. I'll do it again. And then I sent him a pretty blunt text message, like, you know, as you would call it, Kelly style, just letting him know, like, this, if you want help, it has to be today. You have a week and a half left. I can't even guarantee we're going to be able to help you, but if not, I wish you the best. Good luck. And then he called me within like an hour. And I thought, why didn't I do that like 4 days ago? That would have saved me a lot of stress and frustration. So anyway, so then, he did come to terms that he needed to figure out what he's going to do then. And that's when we were able to get him to sign a contract. And
you know, had you seen the house before this?
No.
So you never saw the house?
He was open. I said, well, can my husband come see the house? And before he was like, no, no, no. And then this, when he did call me back, he goes, yeah, I guess that's okay.
Yeah, I went and met him. I took pictures of the house. He was an elderly gentleman, had a stroke. I sat down and he did tell me that your wife is persistent. That was his word.
Annoying.
He was a nice guy. We sat down, we had a little chat and, you know, I came back, but I, you know, and the next visit that we did with two of us together, when we signed, he signed the contract.
Yeah.
Okay. So you, Shigato went and looked at the house, took some pictures. You hadn't made an offer yet, but you knew his payoff and everything like that.
Right.
Okay. And so, how did that go? Was it very much like, this is our offer? And he's like, fine.
Yeah.
Was there any negotiation back and forth?
No,
it was pretty straight up. And, he said, you guys look like nice people that, you know, it's going to go well or something. Yeah, absolutely. So,
and he looked relieved.
He looked relieved. Yes.
Yeah.
And then Kelly got his bank on the phone.
Well, I didn't want to leave him because I knew getting in touch with him was nearly impossible. Right. And so when I was there and he signed the contract, it was like 4 o'clock on a Friday. And I'm like, just wait. I talked to the credit union. I said, we're going to try to get a contract today. And he said, they're going to be there till 5. And so I did a call on speakerphone with him and
to
then
stop
with the
auction.
To stop. Well, no, they weren't going to guarantee that they're going to stop the auction. But they said, send us a contract. We'll take a look at it. We'll let you know early next week.
Okay. So that's great. I think that's a great tip for anybody that's listening right now that could be in this situation. If you got an auction, this was an auction that's a week and a half away, in contact with the bank, they really could care less. The asset, was it worth more than what was due on it? Like, could they have sold it at auction for higher possibly?
Not much. It wasn't in great condition.
Not much. Close. Okay. Yeah. So they probably don't want the house. However, it's just a process, right? So you can get an opportunity to stop the auction potentially. But like, if you buy the house and close on it and pay everything off, like some of the hardest times is actually getting the payoff statement, finding out what's in arrears. Mm-hmm. They could just drag their feet and not tell you what it is.
Yep.
And that's some of the hard parts about it. So I think all of that work that you did ahead of time is really important. Getting him on the call, that was really, really smart. Did somebody tell you to do that, or you just think?
No, I'm like, you're not leaving until we call the credit. I'm not leaving until we call the credit union.
Amazing, amazing. That's like street smarts right there. Great job. And so then from there, got him on the bank or got him on the phone and said, hey, I got the contract. We'll send it over. You got the address, email address. We'll let you know something early next week. So what happened?
So I followed up with the credit union on Monday and they had received it and said, well, I'm going to review my manager. And then we found out literally it was either that Monday or Tuesday. They said, that's fine. But well, then they didn't like the closing date. We had asked for, like, I think it was April 17th close. And they said, no, that's too far.
Which was how far after the auction?
Two and a half weeks.
Okay. So you were trying to get the auction pushed to give you enough time to wholesale the house and move.
Well, not even to wholesale. We weren't even thinking of wholesaling because we were thinking of flipping.
This was a rehab deal.
He needed time because he didn't know where he was going to go, which was a whole other situation and a half. But he didn't know where he was going to go, and he had a lot of random stuff that he was going to have to work through. And so he wanted to buy more time. And we hadn't even started in the title work. So I was like, our title guy said, give yourself 3 weeks, Kelly. And so we wanted to push it off till the 17th. And the bank or the credit union was like, no, that's not going to work. We want it this Friday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And that wasn't, they said they want it the day of the auction. Like, that's not possible. Okay. I talked to my title guy and he said, no. I said, well, how about the Friday? That gives us a couple more days then. Cause it was like on a Wednesday or something. And I said, how about the Friday? And they go, okay, that's fine. But like, it has to be the Friday. And so we found that out. I told the title guy, we're all working towards, you know, that Friday close. We've told the gentleman, like, we're going to set up moving for you. We're going to, you know, do what we can to help expedite this.
And it's still a rehab deal.
It's still a flip at that point.
I'm calling like contractors to say, hey guys, maybe you want to come and take a look at the house. You know, we'll have to start soon, as soon as this thing is signed. So we're like, you know, all systems go.
But the hard part in all this was the finding a place for him to go.
Yes.
That was way harder than I anticipated because, again, he's in his 70s. He really struggled with a lot of things. And so I was like, I'll try to help you. Everything I found, he either didn't like, and then I found one that he loved, went and checked it out. I was like, oh, this is great. It's going to work out. This is fantastic. And then he applied for it and he got denied because of his credit. And that was what, like a few days before all this happened?
And you're doing this without any communication, meaning no phone, no internet.
So he doesn't know I'm working on this stuff.
It's like all physical. Yeah. You have to be like that.
So anyways, and I spent hours trying to talk to like Anne Arundel Department of Housing and Anne Arundel like Aging Department and just trying to find him options. Everything had a wait list of 6 months to like 3 years. And so none of those were an option. Looked at an extended stay. That was more than he could afford. So I was just like frustrated because I'm like, look, all these other things that you maybe could have got into, he didn't want to do, he didn't like. And I'm like, you can't be picky at this point.
Did you ever consider your spare bedroom, setting it up? And
it's a good idea.
That's a solid no.
That's okay. It's a no. All right. I mean, they have like, you can rent out a room, you know, you could maybe like, not. All right.
We like,
I was just trying to figure out how far you're going here to make this.
Although
deal
you know
happen.
What? So. I was getting a little desperate at this point. I'm like, maybe the garage.
The you set up a tent or something. It's nice out. It's like springtime in Maryland. Yeah. Okay. So what ended up happening?
So he ended up, he did have a brother who he was able to stay with. His brother had some real limitations physically. So he didn't want to go there with him because he has a lot he was managing. But ultimately, I think he felt good about it because he said he felt like he could help his brother too. And so he went and moved in with his brother and his brother's wife.
Okay. And then you got it closed by that Friday?
No. Here's the story.
This is really the story. This is probably the most interesting thing. So this is where Adam becomes like a superhero.
Wait. Before you get there, because I kind of know what happened. What was the ARV on this house when you were like analyzing it as a rehab?
320.
320K?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how much rehab cost did it need? 78,000 you had budgeted. And what was the purchase price on it?
162.
Okay, so 230. That's like a 80K delta before costs, money costs, fees. What were you expecting to make on a house like that on a rehab?
Anywhere from like 31 to 40, like low 40s, maybe. I mean, okay. I had holding costs assumed of 6 months. And so I was like, hopefully it'll be faster than that. So it'll probably be like 35 to low 40s.
Okay. Yeah. I would say like 40K is what I would see on something like this. Okay. So that was the rehab. So it wasn't in like a nice area. 320 is pretty low for that area.
No, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah. This is not Ellicott City.
No.
This
is like Glen Burnie.
Yeah.
Glen Burnie. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So you were like driving to Glen Burnie and back for this?
Yeah, but it's not that far from your work though.
No, it's like 30 miles is the shortest distance, more like 40 miles and through the tunnel. And in a span of like 10 days, I had to go to his house like eight times.
Because,
I have the timeline if Bill asks. I'll show you the timeline.
I also have the gas logs, Kelly. I have all the oil changes I have.
I bet you do.
I have the extra wear and tear on the tires.
Yeah.
That we put into this. I expect reimbursement. Okay. Yeah. so Okay, so this was the plan, rehab this house and right. meeting contractors and talking to them about it and stuff like that. So, okay, what ended up happening? Let's bring in Adam.
Okay, so we're supposed to close on Friday, and then Wednesday, I get a call from Title, and he says Kiabi, who was going to be our hard money lender, are backed out because of ground rent on the property. Although there was nothing owed on it, but it's just a stipulation of ground rent made them feel uncomfortable, and so they were backing out. And so I was like, and also the same morning, I got a verbal agreement on a much more expensive house for $870
that we wanted,
that I really, really wanted to flip badly. It's going to be really pretty. But anyway, so I really wanted to make that one work. I wanted to make that work. And then when they backed out, I'm like, well, we were debating, like, what should we do now? And so I went and I was like, we'll figure it out. It's two houses. Like, we can make this work. And so I was upstairs just running a bunch of different numbers and scenarios. I'm like, we've got to be able, we can pay the 162 and then the 70. We can figure that out. We're going to use our PAL, our pledge asset lending account. And I'm like, we can do that. But the problem was with the renovation.
Wait. Okay. I would say 99% of the people that listen to this show have no idea what that is. Can you explain that?
A pledged asset line account. Yeah. So basically we can borrow money against our securities. So like, for example, if, you know, usually up to, I think this was 70%. So.
Taxable account, right?
Yeah. Up to 70%.
You can get access to 70% of your securities?
Yeah.
Wow. Now you know why I usually see like 50%. 70%. Yeah, you do have a finance background. This is really good. So we actually talked about this on a couple shows past. We had one of the guests that was talking about they're using, I don't know if they talked about it or I talked about it. I think they did. But we were just explaining the fact that you can use basically a line of credit against, and securities being stocks, bonds, things like that, an account that you have with, I don't know, Fidelity, Vanguard, these kind of companies, yep. So you can actually pledge that and grab up cash out of it and then pay it back, almost like a home equity line of credit, but without the house, it's your securities account. So, okay,
and
cool.
And it's a much better interest rate too. Like,
do you know what yours was going to be?
Yeah. Kiabi, we were going to do 75%. So we had a 10.5% interest rate with the 2 points, but on the PAL, we could do it at 8.71, I think 8.72 at the time. And now it's 8.71, but I mean, it's basically like the SOFR rate and some other like rates that Charles Schwab has. But anyway, so I was like, I really want to use that money. It's cheaper money. And so we're going to maximize that account out. And I thought, there's gotta be a way we can figure it out. I said, there's a way we can do both. There's gotta be a way we can do both. But I kept running the numbers and doing them both at the same time. I told you, I said, gosh, that's tight. Like, that makes me feel really uneasy because the rehab on the 870 house was significant, right? Like, it was over 100,000. It was it was like 150, I think. So I was like, oh gosh, that's a major renovation. Plus we're going to do 75% on that one too. So I was like, ah, gosh, that's going to be it. I was getting kind of frustrated. I told you, I'm like, I was really optimistic when we first talked, like, we're going to figure this out. Like, the numbers are going to work. It's going to be fine. Now, truthfully, could we have made it work? Yeah. Without, you know, wholesaling. If I had to sell securities, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to pull money from another account. I just didn't. So I told you, I said, look, we can maybe do a HELOC. I know people do that. And you were not feeling that. He was not interested in doing that at all. Correct?
You were going to do a HELOC in like 5 days?
Well, that was the problem. Yeah.
There was a little problem there. Yeah.
Okay. So now you're on Chicago's side.
Yep.
So anyway, so you didn't, but you didn't
love it. I love this. What you're doing is you're like, right now we're going through the process of problem solving. That's what's going through my head. It's just option. Like, what next? What next? What next? And this is how you win the game. It's just, okay, problem, solution, problem, solution, problem, solution. Nope. It's working. It's not working. And you're just trying to look at all of the options. And this is what business is. This is what success looks like. It's about trying to figure out the path and multiple paths and then just killing them. Nope. Here's three viable options. Let's look and see which one we think is going to be the best. Make the best hypothesis, take the best action, and then move forward with that educated guess that we think this is going to be the best route.
For sure. That's exactly what I was doing is I was literally on paper. I'm like, it's going to work out. The numbers are going to work. And then they weren't working. And I was like, that's not where I want to be. So anyway, so tried to do that and he didn't want to do the HELOC. And like I said, probably not feasible, but I was just trying to find options. And I remember in accountability, somebody was talking about a business line of credit. And I told you, I said, I just don't know anything about it. I can't even apply for it and get this, like, it's just not going to happen. And so that's when I was getting frustrated. And I looked at you and I said, I'm going to try to wholesale this. And I thought for sure you were going to be like, here's 20 reasons why that's not going to work, Kelly. And you didn't. You were just like, okay. And so I said, but I don't have a buyer's list. I don't even know what wholesaling, I mean, I have a general idea of what happens there, but like, I don't really know what you really do. And I didn't even know if we could even do it for sure. But I told you, I want to try to wholesale this. And you're like, all right. So,
and the only thing that I knew at that point to answer that question was I knew there was a line in the contract that said the contract was assignable. And I said, okay.
Yeah, but sure. You agreed. You said, we don't know for sure. Like, yeah. We knew that was in there, yeah. But like, we'd never done this. Yeah. We were going down the flipping path. Yeah. And so then when I made that decision, I pivoted. I'm like, okay, I'm committed to this. Let's see if I can do anything in the next few days or not. And then we might look at other options if not.
And how many days are left on the contract to closing?
This is Wednesday afternoon. Oh, Wednesday, we're supposed to close on Friday.
Yeah.
This was 2 days before closing?
2 days before closing, when the bank wanted it to close. 2 days. Two and a half. Yeah.
I had to maximize that. Yeah. Like, it was
okay.
So anyway, I said, I said, well, I'm just going to build like a landing page on the back end of our WordPress site, and nothing fancy, but I've looked at a lot of wholesaler pages and they're not anything elaborate. And so you gave me the photos you had taken and threw up a little description of the house. And I didn't even know how to price this stuff, but I was looking at another wholesaler that I kind of watched their stuff anyways and kind of see what margins they were kind of shooting for. And it was like 83% of ARV. A lot of times was like their asking price plus the renovation. And so I was like, all right, so let's go with that. So I did that, and literally, like, we're not even kidding. Like, I think it was like 2:30 in the afternoon on Wednesday. And I took like an hour and a half, made this landing page, threw it out on Facebook and the different groups I'm in, and on the local RIA's WhatsApp group that I'm in. And then within like a few hours, we had our offer.
So you had it under contract for 162. What did you put it on that WordPress site that you made?
We asked for 215.
215. Whoa. Yeah. That's like 53,000, 53K. Okay. And you mentioned earlier that you built a blog. So that's how you know how to build this stuff on WordPress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. Right now, if you go to our website, it's just right now I just have the homepage done. I need to build the other pages, but I mean, it's a homepage.
But I just say that because there's probably a lot of people who are like, wait, what? Right. Like, how does she know how to do that? So you have some history and experience with that. You didn't have to like find somebody and hire them and negotiate it. It would be done like 2 weeks later. And then on that site, did it say it has to close on Friday? Like, we have to close in 2 days?
I said I needed all offers by 9 a.m. Friday. So I didn't say then, but I didn't even know a time. I didn't even know how much time to give them because I didn't know if I'd have any interested. So I'm like, let's just say Friday at 9.
Okay. So what happened? You got, you say you got an offer by that afternoon?
That evening at like 6:30, I got an email. Well, she messaged me and she was like, hey, I'm going to send you an email with an offer. And they were pretty aggressive. Like, they really, they buy a lot. They do a lot of
auction. And so you recognize them?
No, but she was a Facebook friend of Adam's. So that made me feel better that she was legit then. although he said he doesn't know who it is, but,
it happens.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so then she emailed with an offer at like 6:30. So I probably had the page up at like 4:30-ish. And there was interest. I mean, I was getting a lot of comments on my post, and I made it like a bright purple background, and I was like, hey, if you're looking for a flip in Glen Burnie, message for pricing and pictures. And then I would send them a landing page basically. And then, we had some really
that's important for me to emphasize here. You did not put it there for them to see it. You created intrigue. You did what I call marketing. Yes. You got them interested in
it
and said, send me a message and then I'll give it to you. And so they comment there and then you comment back and it starts bumping up an algorithm. So more people see it.
Yeah. Cause I'm really important to kill the post. It's not going to get any reach. So that's why I was going to put, and at first I was sending the links to people when they would message me, but then I couldn't keep up with the messages. So at some point I just started sharing I would reply to their, comment. And I was like, I'll just put the landing page here.
Yep. Okay, so what did that offer come in at?
2011
via email. 2011. And what else did it say? Like, I can close it right now.
I don't need to see it. I can close when you want. We buy hundreds of houses a year. I asked for, and again, I just copied the disclosure, and I changed a few things, but I leveraged the disclosure from another wholesaler to say that I wanted like basically proof of funds and proof of a business, incorporated, that sort of thing. And so she provided that as well.
Okay. And what did you do?
So then we got the offer. And then I thought, I don't know, can we really accept this offer? Like, we still don't 100% know for sure. Like, were we really allowed to wholesale this? I mean, you knew the contract. So like, we had some level of comfort. But I mean, in fact, we weren't 100% sure. I'm like, this is sweet if we can get, you know, move this property. So then we called Title and we told them what we were thinking of doing now. And they were like, okay, we're going to pivot. That's fine. Like, you have a solution that works. We talked to them. You brought up the blind HUD thing to them, right?
Right.
They weren't interested in that. Correct.
Yeah. They were not feeling it.
They don't do a lot of wholesale deals.
Right.
Yeah. So they weren't really excited about it, but they knew we had at least had, you know, what we were going to do. So that was okay for now. We weren't thrilled with their reaction because they didn't necessarily do a lot of that, but that was okay. But then I told you, I still was nervous to respond to this lady. Cause I'm like, I don't 100% know. I said, I want to talk to Adam. And it was kind of late at night. So I don't want to bug him, but like, I don't know how. She's just sent me like another Facebook message and wants to know what's going to happen. And so do I. So I text Adam and I was like, you don't have to call me. I know it's late, but like, can I talk to you maybe tomorrow or something? And then he responded and he was like, I'll call you in 5 minutes. And then we hung out. We talked a lot over the next 2.5 days, basically. but anyways, it was amazing. So then he called us and we talked to him about what we did. And we said, can we actually wholesale this? And he's like, what contract are you using? And we said the Blackjack contract. And he said, then yeah, you can. And then I said, well, should I wait? Because I'm getting still more interest. And he was like, what's the offer? And I told him, and he said, lock it in. Don't wait. Like, get this done. And so then he was going to send me, he sent me the Blackjack contract that night. And so I stayed up and was trying to edit it, but then it wasn't easy. We didn't have a contract, right? We don't have a wholesale contract because we're not wholesalers. It wasn't easy to edit because it was a PDF file. And so anyways, then the next morning, of course, Adam, like right away in the morning, like messages me. He's like, how's it going? Did you get the contract over? Is it signed? Like, what's going on? And that's one thing. I mean, you know this because you know Adam way better than we do, but like, he's amazing in every way. And this would not have happened without him at all. So like, not even kind of, because the morning you were going to work, it was like a perfect storm because you were getting ready to go to work in the morning and you were like, Kelly, this is all you. I have no time for this. I did you not say that? Yeah. You're like, if
it was just a perfect, you know, again, circumstances. That Thursday, I had something that was planned like 2 months ago. It's all kinds of things. And I was not just, you know, normally I would be able to back it up, but that not that day.
No, not those days. And so Adam became my best friend for those couple of days. And so he would message me and like literally the whole time, he's just like another step ahead. So like, okay, so do you have it done? I'm like, no, I'm trying to edit this contract. And he's like, just a minute. So we had somebody at Blackjack send me the Word doc. I'm like, okay, now we're in business. So got that done, then he said, cause what he said on the phone, he goes, you need to get a B2C signed. I go, what is that? What's that gonna do for me? We don't even know what that is, right? So then got that signed on that Thursday. Remember, I want to close Friday. Got that signed on Thursday. And they were, and then we had the title issues too, because again, we didn't know if we were going to stick with this title company or not. And that's what he was asking. Like, so who's your title company? Do they do this sort of thing? And we're like, no. And then I talked to Adam about the whole like double close thing. And he's like, you don't want to do that. Then you're going to pay title twice. You don't want to do that. And then whenever I talked to title again about it, they were not either. He acted like they couldn't do it or didn't know how to do it or something. So that was like a whole nother stress ball. And so I was trying to.
Were you trying to use the buyer's money to close?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not your own money.
Yeah. I mean, we could have. And we talked about that as an option. But anyway, so that was just that convoluted everything, because then I was thinking of switching title companies like Thursday before we're supposed to close on Friday. So that's going to, of course, push things out. But anyways, so.
What was going on with the bank at this time? They were just, like postponed the auction?
No, well, they've already postponed it because it was already supposed to happen like a couple of days before. And so they didn't know this whole thing at all, what was going on. To them, we're still closing Friday. And
what would change if you didn't close on Friday with the bank? Anything?
See, and that's the thing that title told us, right?
Right. So our title guy at that point, he said that, you know, the bank is not really going to do anything with that. A couple of days. So you might get you know, they're just going
to
be mad maybe, but that's all.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot going to happen. So you do what you need to do. So that one was there, but the definite lessons learned is, you know, the title company that's not familiar with the real estate investors in that industry, you gotta, they're not the right ones for you. That was the feedback from Lindsay and Adam both. And we agree with that.
For sure.
Yeah. Always use an investor-friendly title company. Ideally a referral from another investor that you know in the area.
Right.
Because I mean, they can close standard transactions and they can close complex transactions.
Right.
If you go with a commercial off the shelf title company that realtors use, they can close standard transactions and that's it.
Yeah.
So you have no options. I always want options.
Yeah. So that was a lesson learned there. So
for sure.
Yeah. And
okay. So what happened? Give me the, let's land the plane here.
Okay.
So then
we were moving him out Friday. We realized we weren't going to be able to close till Monday because the only time that title could close, we stuck with our original title company. I talked to him Friday morning and I was like, no, this is what we're doing, the single close, and didn't love it, but he relented. And so, he's like, well, we can have this ready like 3 o'clock or something. And that was the same time the movers were going to be there. So he's like, let's post it off till Monday. And so That's what we did. We closed Monday.
So you moved everything out on Friday. What did you do? You just did a standard assignment. You put an assignment fee on the HUD?
Yeah, that's what he had.
Yes.
Okay, so this buyer came in, paid $201,100. Was that the final price?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, and then net to you was what?
$38,400.
How did that make you feel?
Amazing. Like, I actually didn't even think it even happened. I think you said Adam sent you the picture, the screenshot that I sent Adam.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm not even lying to you, I literally didn't think it was real. Like, I went to closing Monday and I still thought this whole thing was going to fall apart. Like, I kept telling my son the whole time because he was getting excited. And I'm like, don't get excited, Ian. It's not really going to happen. Like, it's going to fall apart. Like, I can't believe this is even happening. And then Monday, we got the checks on Tuesday, and not until I actually deposited them. Like, that was a crazy 2.5 days. I can't believe that happened. So...
So you planned on making about $40,000 on the flip. You ended up making $38,400 on the wholesale.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to do any work.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you had to do a lot of work up front. Right? People that say wholesalers don't have to do anything, like, I hope they listen to this and go, oof, man, that there's work there, right? You got to add value to make a return like this. Like, if you can't help multiple different people along the way, you know what? I'm a little bit disappointed in Adam. I'm going to be honest. You got here. Here's the deal. Here's what I see. If you called me that night instead of Adam, here's what I see in all this. And this is just me being a little greedy. Okay. You sent it out for 215. You have so much interest that you can't even respond to the messages fast enough. And you get an offer at 201,100 and he says, lock it in. It was 215. I would have been like, I'll take it off the market at 205, but not at 201,100. Like, I just sent this to 100 people. Mm-hmm. I can't even keep up with my Facebook Messenger right now. You want to take it off the market? Give me a 205. We'll call it a day.
I'm not going to lie. So that did cross my mind, to be totally honest. But there was just so much going on. I was just happy.
I know, but listen to this. She sent you an offer and then she followed up with a Facebook message after going, where are we with this? Where are we with this? Like, we're missing something here. Like, there's something, and I hope you watch this. Like, the next step that you need to do is follow this along the way. Are they flippers or are they landlords?
No, the people that bought it, they do both flipping and wholesaling.
So they're not like buy and hold investors. They're not going to rent this out long term. So I'd watch it, and I'd see how your ARV stacks up to what they actually sell.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I suspect they might think the ARV is $20,000 or $30,000 higher than what you have and could probably get the work done a little cheaper.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting to see. They probably might be 50 in and sell it for like 340 or so, maybe 350. It'll just be interesting to see. So I would definitely watch it and see when it pops up on the MLS and how long it lasts and all that stuff. Because that'll just, it'll just sharpen your axe and get you a little bit better. I used to always follow my wholesale deals all the way down. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, because Adam, at least $4,000.
He was amazing.
You owe Kelly at least $4,000.
No, he doesn't.
I think at 205 we could have hooked him for sure. We got to negotiate. And here's I hope the lesson that everybody takes from this. It's not about being greedy. It's the fact that if you take an offer fast, the buyer, it doesn't matter if they love the deal before they made the offer, they feel like something might be wrong because you took the offer that fast. I always countered everything. Not, and it could just be like, just counter the closing date. Just counter the inspection minimums. Just counter the inspection date. Counter the appraisal. Counter something. It doesn't all even have to be price. Yeah. It's just the fact that I'm not okay with that. There's just a little adjustment where they're like, they don't think that they're like, wait, what did I miss?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a big proponent of never accepting that first offer as written. No matter what it is, we just have to make a little tweak. So they go, they have to then agree to us versus us saying, we'll take it. And they're like, because then they could, that I've seen people back out because of that. They're like, what did I miss? They're running the numbers again. And they're like, wait, this happened too fast. It's too good. So possibly the fact that she messaged you again and again and was like really pushing it, you're like, okay, well, all right, we'll take it. Like, but I always recommend going forward, you counter at least a little something just to make sure that they're like, okay, we got a deal here.
For sure.
Like they stole it from you.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. So, and who knows, maybe if Adam's Facebook friends with them, they're listening to this. Yeah. So but I would have countered up for sure. I think you, with that much interest, but well done. That's amazing. 38-4. What would you say, you would say to all the people that are listening to this, trying to get their first deal? Like what's a piece of advice that you would give to them? Something that you could help them with?
Yeah, I actually just, about 2 weeks ago, talked to a 7F member. He called me and was just asking, cause I posted in the group, kind of what happened, and how it was a struggle and it's not easy. And I feel like sometimes we don't see those kind of posts. And like I said before, like when you're an entrepreneur, it can feel really lonely and, you don't know that other people are struggling. And so he asked if I would talk to him. So we chatted, one day, like I say, a couple of weeks ago. And I just told him the same thing, like, stick with it. Don't give up on what you're doing. And just, that's the best thing, is just keep believing yourself, be consistent. And just because you're not seeing the results right now doesn't mean that you won't. So I just, as long as you have that, like you said before, that belief in yourself, like just don't abandon that. And that it will eventually, pay off for you. And out to your community, I would say too. I mean, that's one of the best things about 7F. I mean, and I'm not just saying this because we're on this call, but we talk about this too.
Yeah.
Just surround yourself with people who want you to win. Like Adam was it. Like he was messaging me throughout the whole Thursday, Friday, even Monday morning. I thought, oh, it's a weekend. He probably even forgot he even helped me at the end of the week. Monday morning, he's like, you going to close? I was like, yeah, I am. Like he knew all this. So like surrounding yourself with people who want to see you win and are as excited as you are that you did. So I think that's huge.
Totally. And not only that, right after he got the picture, he forwarded it to me. He's like, dude, you got to check this out. Like, that's how excited he was about it. And that's how excited I was because, I mean, him and I, we talk about you. We talk about a lot of the members. We talk about the people that are inside the community. We are constantly, like, the majority of the time that we talk, it's not about Blackjack. It's not about our business. It's not about 7Figure. It's about the people and the members and the folks that are out there on the street doing the thing and how we can make it better. And provide more opportunity for them, and like we win way more than when you guys win than when we actually do deals. Like there's something about helping somebody else get something to the finish line and do something like this, especially when they've been showing up, especially when they've been on the accountability group calls. They're watching the videos. They're at the challenges. They're present. They're in the front row. Like the front row gets the visibility. Like it gets that's what.
Yeah.
It's important. Like that's the kind of stuff. If they're playing all out, so are we. We're on the team, but they don't show up to practice. Mm-hmm. They don't put in the reps. They don't work hard. Yeah. I'm going to give treatment to the people who show up to every practice, and that's it. That's the most important thing. But like, we're all a team. It's really cool when we see the other people win. I want to help everyone, but the squeaky wheel gets the grease. You're the one that asked for some help and some support at that time, right? And he's a total go-giver. And I think him and I are cut from the same cloth. I remember doing this exact thing for hundreds and hundreds of people when I was a laser coach and I was involved and I was the COO of the company and all of those things. Like, and honestly, I still struggle with that. I answer everything. How can I get there? How can I spend that time? How can I pour in? So really cool. Shigato, what percentage of this deal would you say that you were involved in?
30.
What?
30%?
You're thinking of something else, sure, entirely.
It's all that driving.
Was his contribution. All that driving. All that driving.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys negotiate that after the show. I'll let you guys negotiate that after the show. Because my next question was, thought you were going to say like 10 or like 5.
I just listened to you go from 201 to 205.
Yeah, you're being greedy. No.
He's starting high. Yeah. He's starting high for the negotiation. Because the next question I was going to ask you is, are you guys splitting this $38,400 check based on 70-30
then? He wanted to spend it. I said, put it back in the business. This is what we're doing. We've got to grow the business. No.
All right. Well, I'll leave you guys on a Monday evening to chat on that one. Your 12-year-old son, 12 years old, right? So he didn't want to listen to mom for like the 5 months of you talking about nonstop real estate. But it sounded like when the check was coming for almost $40,000.
No, he's a rock star. Like he is my cheerleader, to be honest. Like I think whenever I joined, I think it was Megan I talked to early on whenever I was signing up for 7F. And she's like, you know, is Shigato like your biggest cheerleader or your biggest support? And I'm like, it's my son. Like Ian, everybody needs an Ian, I swear. Like he's just, anytime like I would get yelled at on the phone or something, he'd be like, mom, you're none of those bad things. You're the best mom. I love you. Like just building me up. So no, he is up there the whole time.
That's awesome. Sounds like you got a lot of cheerleaders around you and cheerleaders are guys and girls. You got a lot of support, which is really cool. And I'm sure from everything I hear and see from Shigato's body language, he is a total supporter of you, even though he thinks eight trips to the house.
Right?
33, I think. No, no.
Well, I'm glad you guys have a sense of humor. What are some of the things? Okay, we got to wrap this up. We've been on this call for a long time. It's an amazing podcast. But what do you need? Like, what can I help you? There's a lot of people that listen to this. We'll send the email out to a lot of folks. You know, what do you want to let people know? Maybe there's people that you want to wholesale some deals to, or you're looking for deals or money or something like that. Like, what is your best commercial to the folks at the end of this show if they want to, you know, find out more about you, or like, how can I use the platform?
Obviously, if there's any leads that you have in the Maryland area, of course. But of course, I need to work on my buyers list. So if you're in like buying properties in Maryland specifically, definitely message me, Kelly with an I, at wecarebuyshomes.com, and let me know you want to be added to the buyers list. That's probably the best thing.
Yep, and then maybe
We Care Buys Homes. W E C A R E B-U-Y-S homes.com.
And I would say if there are anybody that wants to invest with us, we're always welcoming those, you know, just reach out. We'll be happy to tell you more exciting stories about how we can close deals for you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm thankful to know you guys. Same. I'm thankful that you're here. And I've just had great conversations with you, and I really appreciate being an opportunity for you guys as well, growing your investments and things like that. So just, I knew from the second that you were engaging in the community, Kelly, that you're going to be an awesome part of it if and when you decided to jump in. And so I'm really thankful that you did. And Shigato, I'm thankful to have gotten to know you a lot better over the past few weeks. So I had an awesome time. I think we could talk for another 2 or 3 hours on the show, but, everybody doesn't want to listen to us argue over what percentage Shigato deserves of the $38,400. So, all right, everybody, if you're interested in getting involved with us, the best way to do that is to go to 7figureRunway.com, the number 7figureRunway.com. And if you are a investor that's done hundreds and hundreds of deals and you're regularly doing more than 10 deals a year, you can still fill out an application there, but you'll be kind of in our altitude program, which is a higher level program. But the best place to go is just there, 7figureRunway.com. Check it out. We've got an event starting Wednesday and Thursday for our altitude group here in Spring Hill, Tennessee. And then Friday and Saturday, we have our runway program. Those programs are available live and virtual. So we do a virtual stream of those. We do breakout sessions for the virtual folks that can't make it. But I love getting together with our community. So tomorrow I have a lot of our 7-figure alumni coming in for the first time. We're doing an awesome alumni event. And then the rest of the week I have Altitude and Runway. We have a charity event, a lot of really cool stuff going on this week. It's like my favorite week. It's like my birthday week, Kelly, but good birthday. This is going to be like a good, fun birthday week for all of our members. Just celebrate it with your 40K. Come on. All right. Have a great day. I love the show. This was a really fun one. Thank you guys for both being here. I really appreciate it. And I'll see everyone on the next podcast. Bye.